Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, happy birthday to the Brooklyn Bridge. 125 years old this weekend. And yes, happy birthday, Brooklyn Bridge, one of New York's most familiar icons, turns 125 officially this Sunday. There'll be a day-long celebration of the Brooklyn Bridge on Saturday, headed up by Mayor Bloomberg and Brooklyn Borough President Marty Markowitz, with runs across the bridge, biking across the bridge, food, music, balloons, the whole thing. So let's celebrate right now with Francis Marone, historian, lecturer, tour guide leader, author of books, including an architectural guidebook to Brooklyn. Hi, Francis. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hello.
What did the bridge look like on day one, May 24th, 1883? Was it ready for day one?
Yes, it looked an awful lot like it looks today. I mean, a lot of the things that we love about the bridge today, it has had work done on it since then, as has been necessary because of significant differences in the forms of transportation that cross the bridge today as compared with then. But the aesthetic dimension of the bridge, such as we know it, with the amazing web-like cables and so forth, was basically the same as today.
Francis Marone, I'll also point out, is the art and architect critic for the New York Sun. You mentioned aesthetically pleasing, and yeah, everybody loves looking at the Brooklyn Bridge. What makes it so aesthetically satisfying?
I think that, its designers did not set out to make it, an aesthetically pleasing object.
Really? Not at all? I mean, the architect, Roebling, John Augustus Roebling, was that his name?
Yes.
He didn't have public aesthetics in mind when he designed?
Sure he did, but the main thing was keeping the thing up. I mean, this was a technologically unprecedented thing that they were doing. This was more than half, again, as long as any suspension bridge that had ever been built. And so the primary concern was keeping the bridge from falling into the water, basically. And it turned out that the means of holding the bridge up were also the means of making the thing aesthetically as pleasing as it was. The 19th century was a great century for sort of the confluence of engineering and aesthetics. And the cable system that John Roebling devised for the bridge turned out to be a visually stunning thing. He did not begin with the idea that he was going to create a visually stunning thing.
Right, and it's kind of the interaction between all those cables and the Gothic arches.
That's true. And the Gothic arches themselves are very interesting. They did not need to be Gothic arches. It's not a case like that of the medieval cathedrals, where the pointed arch was part of the structural system. In this case, the pointed arch has nothing to do with the structural system of the bridge.
So that was aesthetic.
It was purely aesthetic.
So why do we like looking at the Brooklyn Bridge so much more than the Manhattan Bridge or the Williamsburg Bridge? I think I speak for most New Yorkers. Is the technology different?
No, not significantly. I don't think that that has anything to do with our response to it. I want to point out that for some New Yorkers, the Brooklyn Bridge is not necessarily head and shoulders above the other suspension bridges. I think they're all very, very beautiful. In the case of the Brooklyn Bridge, however, I think that there is that spider's web-like quality of the cables. I know myself, a couple of weeks ago, I was standing in that little Main Street waterfront park in Dumbo, and it was about maybe 5 p.m., and I was gazing across at the bridge, something that I have seen a billion times in my life, and I just saw the sun set through the cables of the bridge. And I thought that, you know, I had seen the Brooklyn Bridge in every season, in every aspect, that nothing about the Brooklyn Bridge would ever surprise me. And yet, this was just one of the most glorious sights that I've ever beheld in my life. And it was because of the cables of the bridge. It's not something that would have been possible with the Manhattan Bridge or the Williamsburg Bridge.
But give me an architecture critic's eye view of the other arguments, because you said there are some people who might prefer the Manhattan Bridge or the Williamsburg Bridge aesthetically. What would they say?
Nobody prefers the Williamsburg Bridge aesthetically. However, when it comes to suspension bridges, I think you could say that even an ugly suspension bridge is beautiful. The graceful arc across the water is just an inherently beautiful form. So the Williamsburg Bridge does its level best to disprove that notion, but ultimately fails to do so, and it is beautiful. The Manhattan Bridge is very different from the Brooklyn Bridge. It really sort of partakes of the formal vocabulary of Beaux-Arts classicism of the late 19th and early 20th centuries, Carrere and Hastings. The architects of the New York Public Library were involved in its design, and it really is a very beautiful bridge. I don't think it's as beautiful as the Brooklyn Bridge, but ultimately, you know, the greatest sight in New York City, the greatest sight, I'll go so far as to say, in America.
Uh-oh, big statement coming.
Oh, yeah. Is when you fly in to New York at night and you look out the window of the airplane at the city. And, of course, everybody is struck by the tall buildings that are all lit up at night and so forth. But I think that just about everybody's eyes gravitate to the East River bridges, these graceful spans across the water, all lit up just like the skyscrapers, are a sight like no other.
Yes, and you know, I used to prefer the view from the top of the World Trade Center to the top of the Empire State Building for exactly that reason. The harbor view, proximity with the three bridges was just so gorgeous to my eye. We have a few minutes left with art and architecture critic Francis Marone celebrating the 125th anniversary, or birthday, I guess we say, of the Brooklyn Bridge, born May 24th, 1883. Hey, Francis, there were no cars in 1883, so what was the bridge built for?
The bridge was built for foot traffic. It was built for horse-drawn carts, and it was built for cable cars. Of Washington Roebling's invention originally, and then they were in turn supplemented and eventually supplanted by electric streetcars, or what we call trolleys, and also elevated railroads.
How did they rehab the bridge for changing transportation times?
Well, early on, there was not necessity of rehabbing it. You mean when automobiles came in?
Yeah. Well, then, and they had the streetcars, and they had the subways, and those aren't there anymore. I guess it took certain kinds of tracks for the streetcars, and I don't know if the pedestrian walkway was there in the middle, the way it is now, the pedestrian and bicycle path.
Yes. It was.
It was.
And early on, these things were just added. It was only sometime after that that significant structural changes had to be made to the bridge. In the 1950s, particularly, the bridge really went through a major structural renovation.
How come the Brooklyn Bridge was never tolled, like the Triborough or many other bridges? Is this out of your bailiwick?
Yes, it is, I guess.
That's all right. Because, you know, I think it's fair to say that the congestion pricing debate is in a way a surrogate for putting tolls on the various East River bridges, mm-hmm. which would amount to about the same thing, but congestion pricing was believed to be more politically acceptable.
Yes.
And have you noticed that, well, do you take people on walking tours across the bridge?
Yes, I do.
What do you tend to show them and talk about?
Well, for, Well, the first thing I tell them is to watch out for the bicyclists. After that,
That's good advice. Maybe they should separate the bicycle and pedestrian ways, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, they do, theoretically, but not everyone pays attention. The first things I talk about are, of course, the stories that are connected with the construction of the bridge, the use of the pneumatic caissons in the building of the bridge, the problems that ensued from that, deaths of workers, and so on. And
Francis Roebling, the architect himself, died in the process.
Well, John Roebling, who was the original designer of the bridge, who was a German immigrant and a polymath, was actually killed not in the construction of the bridge, but before the construction of the bridge began, a freakish ferry boat accident in which he got his foot crushed, contracted tetanus, and died. Then his son, Washington, took over the continuing work on the bridge. He contracted what at the time was called caisson disease, which we now label nitrogen narcosis, though they hadn't made that particular diagnosis yet. And he was an invalid throughout most of the construction of the bridge, but did not die. And his wife, Emily, whose role in the design and construction of the bridge was largely unknown or underknown until David McCullough wrote his book, The Great Bridge, took over a considerable amount of the work on the bridge.
Isn't it always thus,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
The wife who did half the work didn't get any of the credit until some new history came along. All right, that's where we leave it with Francis Moroney, art and architecture critic, columnist for the New York Sun, author of books including an architectural guidebook to Brooklyn. Happy birthday, Brooklyn Bridge, May 24th, 1883 to May 24th, 2008, 125 years. There'll be celebrations all Saturday around the bridge. Francis, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up, we'll talk to the author of a new Smithsonian Magazine article who asks, are New Yorkers really rude? Stay with us.